at the Villa Rose by A.E.W. Mason. Adapted for radio by David Benedictus. With Andrew Sachs as Inspector Hanno and Ian Masters as Ricardo.
Monsieur Hanno.
Mr. Ricardo, an unexpected pleasure. But not a social call, surely, so early in the morning.
I wish it were.
Myself, I am in Aix for my pains, and take the waters daily. I did not think to find you here.
I did not know myself that I would be calling on the great Detective Hanno.
I'm not here as a detective.
Nor I as a friend.
Let me chance my arm. Last night there was a murder in Aix. It is in connection with that.
Yes, yes.
Since you're clearly not the victim, my old friend, and unlikely to be the murderer, I wonder, what can your connection be?
Well, two nights ago, I was at the casino.
Faites bonjour, mesdames et messieurs, le chef.
An English girl, no doubt a victim of ill chance. I followed her into the casino gardens.
Mademoiselle.
And then back into the grand salon. To tell you the truth, Hanno, even a confirmed old bachelor like myself, when confronted by such beauty.
Yes, yes.
But it was Harry Wethermill she wanted. He had a large pile of chips in front of him. She came and stood behind him and put one gloved hand on his shoulder and added her meagre 5 francs to his hoard. I heard him say,
"We shall sink or swim together."
Faites vos jeux, mesdames et messieurs.
Harry.
From that moment on, Harry's excellent luck deserted him. 4 times he renewed the bank, and 4 times he lost.
That's enough, Celia. It'll be cooler in the garden.
I have taken your luck away.
You'll have to take yourself away, darling, before you can do that.
The English girl puzzles me. Now, she has French chic, but whence had she acquired it? Harry, of course, like me, is staying at the Majestic.
Harry Wethermill, I already know. I met him at one of your amusing London dinners.
Oh, I had forgotten. He is something of a scientific genius. Makes a living through patenting his inventions.
Indeed.
And now, he tells me, he's engaged to this girl. Lucky chap. 30 minutes later, as I was leaving the casino, I saw them in conversation with a stout lady, wearing a good many jewels.
You are ready, Shelley?
Yes, madame. Goodbye, Harry.
Shall I see you tomorrow evening?
We will not be here tomorrow, monsieur.
We have plans for tomorrow, Harry, but the night after I shall want you.
I shall thank you for wanting me. Here at the Villa des Fleurs?
Where else?
Harry and I walked together up the hill, talking of inconsequentialities. Then, this morning...
You must help me, Mr. Ricardo, you must.
Not until I have finished shaving.
I cannot wait.
You need money, Harry?
No.
What then has happened?
Something terrible.
You may have already read the story, Monsieur Hanno. It is the front page news. Madame Camille Devray, the stout lady I had seen with Celia Harland, had been found in the Villa Rose, brutally strangled. Upstairs, Hélène Vauquier, her maid, was lying in bed, her hands tied. She had been chloroformed. So much I could understand from the paper. But the details you might like to...
The murder was discovered at midnight by Sergeant Perrichet. It is thought from the absence of marks upon the door and windows that the murderer was admitted by someone within the house. Madame's motor car has disappeared, and with it her young English companion. Madame was notorious for the opulence of her jewels, and it seems that the house was searched for them. There's a reward for the apprehension of the Englishwoman. The investigations continue.
Harry begged me to approach you. He said that if you were in charge of the case...
So you agreed to intercede with me, even though you have doubts as to the girl's innocence, even though you know me to be en vacances? And where is Mr. Wethermill now?
In the foyer. May I fetch him?
Can I prevent it? What do you wish me to do, monsieur?
I implore you, monsieur, to discover the truth, to find out what has become of Celia.
The affair's in the hands of the police.
But with you here in Aix...
You have perhaps a photograph of the young lady.
It does her scant justice.
And you have known her for...
2 weeks.
You must know that this very morning, the investigating judge sent to ask for my assistance, and I refused.
But, Monsieur Hano...
The case is dark, Monsieur Harry. I warn you.
How dark?
On a scale of darkness, it is pitch black. Consider. Someone let the murderers into the house. No lock was picked. No bolt was forced. So, who is there in Madame Dauvray's household? The list is not a long one. There is the chauffeur, Henri Servitaz, but he was away last night. There is Hélène, the housekeeper. There remains only Mademoiselle Célie.
Then it must have been the housekeeper.
She has served Madame Dauvray for 7 years, and how many opportunities do you suppose she's had for such a crime? She was found unconscious in bed.
But that doesn't mean that...
Upon awakening, she was violently sick and lapsed into unconsciousness. How much do you know about your fiancée? For example, how did she become companion to Madame Dauvray?
I do not know.
Madame Dauvray was a walking provocation to every rogue throughout France, and yet for 7 years, Hélène Vauquier protects her. Until your new friend, Célie, joins the household, whereupon Madame is robbed and murdered.
Suppose that Celia is also one of the victims.
You wish that?
Of course not. Mr. Ricardo, you have met her. Would you believe her capable of... well, of murder?
When I saw her, she was hysterical and unhappy.
She loves me. You saw that too. I'm a scientist, not a romantic. I can face facts when I have to. But when the truth is known, Celia's innocence will shine out.
Monsieur Wethermill, I shall take up the case. But I must warn you that I shall follow it to the end, be the consequences bitter as death.
Sergeant Pellichet, it was you who discovered the crime.
Inspector?
Yes, I read about you in this morning's newspaper, and I have the honour to be associated with you in this case.
Monsieur is pleased to laugh at me, but it is not I who called myself intelligent. I should like to be so, for the good Lord knows I do not look it.
Oh, then congratulate yourself. It's a great advantage to be intelligent and not to look it. Tell us about last evening.
It rained. I passed the villa at 9:30 as I made my tour. Now, that gate was closed. There was a light in the window beneath the gable. Some 90 minutes later, when I returned to the villa, I noticed that, although all was now in darkness, the gate was open.
Ah.
I closed it and continued on my beat. An hour later, I returned to discover the gate once more ajar, and a light again ablaze in that second-floor room.
Yes.
My suspicions aroused, I walked around the villa and found that the shutters of one of the ground floor windows, that one, gentlemen, had been swung back and the window was open. I was convinced that something terrible had happened.
Quite so.
I stepped carefully through the window. By the light of my lantern, I saw a woman, Madame Dauvray, huddled on the floor. Her face was swollen and black, and a piece of cord knotted about her neck had sunk so deeply into the flesh that at first... I did not see it. Upstairs, I found Hélène Vauquier in bed, snoring in an alarming fashion.
Ah, Bernard, how are you, Monsieur le Commissaire?
Oh, gentlemen, this is a sad business.
You stalled. But now that Hanno has agreed to take on the case...
Has he indeed?
Harry persuaded him.
Well, of course, Inspector, I had hoped that you would interest yourself... Things have been left just as Perrochet found them.
You've spoken to the chauffeur?
Yes. Mademoiselle Celie suggested to him that he take Tuesday night off to visit his family. He left the garage locked and the keys in the kitchen. Three cans of petrol were missing.
It seems as if the murderer, or murderers, were let into the house, committed the murder, let themselves out through the windows which give onto the lawn, used the keys to the garage, and drove off in the car filled with petrol from the cans.
And those windows were the only ones open.
Oh. Then let us approach them with care. Aha. As you may see, my intelligent friend Sergeant Perrochet has taken pains not to disturb the ground. One clear set of prints pointing to the driveway. A small arched high-heeled shoe. The imprint of the sole more marked than that of the heel. Are there shoes in the house which fit these marks?
Well, only those taken from Mademoiselle Sadie's bedroom.
Monsieur Wethermill, I warned you fairly, did I not?
I am not afraid.
Then read the story of these footprints. A young and active girl, wearing a pair of Mademoiselle Celie's shoes, springs from the room in which a murder has been committed. At the second step, you see, here, the hem of her gown catches, perhaps beneath the point of the shoe. To save herself from falling, she brings the other foot down sharply, stamping the heel into the ground. She recovers, climbs into the car, which drives off before midnight.
So precise.
Oh, certainly, certainly. The gate is open at 11, and Perrichet closes it. It's open again at 12.
Then, when I first closed the gate and came up to the house, the murderers were in that room, holding their breath, not 3 meters away. Mon Dieu.
It is probable. Let us examine the room.
What is the matter, Hanno? You are transfixed.
Your men may be thorough, Bernard, but if they'd looked carefully behind the settee, they would have found these...
Scraps of paper, merely.
All the knowledge in the world was once scraps of paper. And you see, as I reassemble these, we find a message. Mr. Wethermill, do you have about your person a letter written by Mademoiselle Celie?
Here.
What is the message?
Je ne sais pas.
Oh, in that case...
No, that is the message. The writing is from the same hand, would you say?
Well, there are strong resemblances.
I agree, but in the note there seems to have been an attempt at disguise.
Or strong emotion. Yet should not the emotion rather have been in a letter to her fiancé? Who knows if you do not, Mr. Wethermill? This cushion on the settee. If I take it to the sunlight, I think perhaps...
A stain.
A small brown stain. And some interesting creases.
That's nothing.
The companion cushion is also creased. And here, gentlemen, a little slit. But why? Let us venture upstairs to the room of Mademoiselle Celie. Ah, now, Mr. Wethermill, what do you suppose belongs in this little jewel case?
Diamond eardrops. I gave them to her.
Monsieur le Commissaire... Has anyone been permitted entry into this room?
No one except Hélène Vauquier.
But that's outrageous.
So the housekeeper is recovered?
She is weak, but I thought we should have a description of what Celie Harland was wearing when she left the house.
Was she left alone in the room?
Well, not for a moment. Really, monsieur. We also know that last evening Mademoiselle Celie bought some cord identical with that which was found around Madame Duvray's neck.
Oh,
we have it from the shopkeeper.
Yes, that could be important. I think we must speak urgently to Hélène Vauquier.
I was told that I could go to bed as soon as I had dressed Mademoiselle for the séance.
Oh. So Mademoiselle Celie practiced séances. Tell us more of her.
I hated her.
Go on, Mademoiselle.
One night last June we were in Paris, and Madame had gone to dine at the Abbaye Montmartre. She returned... with this English girl, who had been telling fortunes and dancing amidst the tables. It fell to me to bathe her and put her to bed. Her clothes, monsieur. Madame had taken pity on her, and now lies murdered as a reward for her charity.
Oh, calm yourself, mademoiselle.
She must be dressed by the finest modistes, with the softest linen, pretty ribbons for her hair. Within the week, I am nothing at all. So do not ask me to speak impartially of her.
Your feelings do you no discredit. But these seances...
Oh, any rogue with a pack of cards and a lack of scruples could make a fortune out of Madame. One day, Mademoiselle suggested that together we could provide a service far more impressive than the local mountebanks. And I consented... and could never afterwards refuse. For had Madame known that I was also tricking her, I should have lost my place.
How exactly did you operate these seances? What did Mademoiselle Celie do?
She would make the spirits appear and speak.
And she was never caught out?
Never. But she was practised. She told me that for many years, even as a child, she'd travelled through England giving exhibitions with her father.
Oh... Did you know that, Mr. Wethermill?
No, and I do not now.
The story is true. One night in Leamington, I attended one of these exhibitions. I had been puzzling as to where I had seen the girl before. One would not quickly forget that evening, nor that girl.
I would place Celie in a cabinet with a string tied across the door. The lights would be turned down, and in a moment, she would be moving around the room in a pair of soft-soled slippers. She might drape a lace scarf about her head and become an old, old woman, or a soldier, or a child. Tambourines would rattle and fingers touch the forehead and the neck, and there would be strange voices and apparitions, great ladies of the past. And when at last the lights were turned up, Celie would be discovered, once more in her cabinet, exhausted.
These visitations spoke to Madame?
Through Mademoiselle's voice.
Did they write her messages, too?
Sometimes. Answers to questions. Mademoiselle would have them ready prepared.
And how were they delivered? Not by mail.
They would flutter onto the table.
I speculate that on such occasions a message might flutter down with the words, je ne sais pas.
Oh, indeed not, monsieur. It would never do for a spirit to confess ignorance.
And last night, there was a séance in the salon.
Madame and Mademoiselle had dinner in the casino, but they told me they would be back early. At about 9:30, I was summoned to the salon, where I found Madame Dauvray, Mademoiselle Celie, and another woman.
Had you seen her before?
No, monsieur.
What was she like?
Sallow complexion, monsieur, with black hair and eyes like beads. Maybe 45 years old. Madame gave me instructions.
You will help Celie to dress, Hélène, and be very quick. You will believe Adèle after tonight.
So Adèle was the name of this strange woman. It was not a false name, mademoiselle?
I think it was Adèle.
Go on.
She sat defiantly on the edge of the chair.
I shall keep my wits about me.
While I was laying out Mademoiselle's black dress and her noiseless slippers, she said to me,
when I have gone down to the salon, you can go to bed, Hélène. Adèle will be fetched by a friend in a motor car, and I can let her out and fasten the door again.
She said that?
Oh, do not condemn her too quickly, monsieur. And not upon my words alone, for, as I say, I hated her.
Indeed.
I asked Mademoiselle what she would do without me as her confederate.
There will be no difficulty.
And this is why I think that there was no séance last night. For when she had bathed, she would have none of her plain black robe.
My residue green chiffon, Hélène, my silk stockings, and the satin slippers with the large buckles.
That is not how one dresses for a séance, but how one dresses to meet one's lover.
Oh, there, my dear.
I have here a list of all that Mademoiselle was wearing. I dressed her in all these garments myself, excepting only her white lace coat, which I laid out on her bed.
You are helpful, mademoiselle.
It is possible, monsieur, that while mademoiselle was dressing, Madame Dauvray and the woman Adèle went into the dining room for some lemonade. Once dressed, mademoiselle runs downstairs, through the empty salon, opens the glass doors, and is gone to meet her lover. And then the thief, an accomplice of Adèle's, enters through the open glass doors and hides, awaiting Madame's return from the dining room. In which case, Mademoiselle is innocent.
That doesn't account for the lace coat in which she left the house. She must have returned to her room for that after you retired to bed.
I had forgotten the coat.
Suppose the girl is going to meet her lover, but the lover is the murderer. She opens the door for him.
It is not possible.
Indeed, Harry, it is.
A young girl, tingling with excitement, at the bottom of the stairs, she turns to me and says,
Hélène, you can go to bed.
For her, the happiness, the lover. For me.
Hélène, you can go to bed.
So, after she had descended the stairs,
I put the lights out in her room, and as she had ordered me to do, went to bed. The next thing I remember,
Oh, you're safe now, mademoiselle. One thing more. This description of Mademoiselle Celie's apparel is complete, is it not?
I believe so, monsieur.
Well, I ask because mademoiselle was in the habit of wearing a pair of diamond eardrops, and they're not on this list.
That is quite true, monsieur. I had forgotten the eardrops.
As anybody might. But did she wear them last night? Now think. Think. It's not from me that you will get the answer, mademoiselle.
I think she wore them. Yes. Yes, I remember it well. She took them off before her bath, and they lay on the dressing table. She replaced them in her ears while I dressed her hair.
Then we must add them to your description. As for your mistress, did she keep money in the house?
Oh, very little. Her checks were accepted everywhere.
Where did she keep her jewellery?
In a safe in her bedroom, monsieur.
What did she do with the keys?
That I cannot tell you, for I do not know.
Did Mademoiselle Celie know of the safe?
Oh, yes. She must often have seen Madame take the jewels out and replace them.
Mademoiselle, thank you. Your ordeal is over.
May I leave this villa, monsieur?
Oh, certainly. You're free to go.
Oh, monsieur. I thank you.
Oh.
Thank
but,
you.
Yes, but you're not to leave X. Hmm? You have friends to stay with? Good.
Yes.
Durette has a car to take you wherever you wish to go.
Thank you.
Hanno, is that wise?
If she's implicated, we shall learn more if we leave her free than if we keep her under lock and key.
Yes. It's time to take a look in the murdered woman's room.
Poor lady.
We thought it proper to bring her here. Strangulation is a brutal business. And the safe in which she hid her jewels each night, it had been left ajar.
Oh, had it so?
And here, the inventory of Madame Dovray's jewellery. Mm. See for yourself, Anna.
Yes, if she did indeed keep her jewels in this safe, why has the room been turned upside down? Ricardo, your penknife.
Hmm? Here.
What are you hoping...
Shh. The fine blade. Precisely. Now, let me just...
God.
There. A diamond necklace. A tiara with emeralds. Two rings of pigeon blood rubies. A gold bracelet studded with opals. And more. You may check the items against the inventory.
But that is astounding. She was never robbed at all.
The murderers escaped merely with what she wore. Can't you see the scene? The old woman locking up her jewels in this safe every night while her maid or companion looks on, and then as soon as she's alone, removing them stealthily to this secret place. Then picture to yourself last night the murderers opening the safe and finding just the inventory, ransacking the room with nothing. They must leave, and with only one pearl necklace, when they had counted on a great fortune. But, gentlemen, there is something in this house which even I do not understand and which makes me fearful.
Hélène Vauquier's cab.
Ah, let us see her on her way. And then we must again to the room of Mademoiselle Celie.
Monsieur, something has been taken from the room of Mademoiselle.
No, no.
But yes, monsieur, upon this dressing table there was a small pot of cold cream. Now it's gone.
My friend Perrichet, they do you less than justice. Lunch, gentlemen. Garçon, take this letter to the gentleman standing at the door and then bring us the carte.
Monsieur.
Gentlemen, I do apologize for my unsociable behavior, but now, while we enjoy this excellent claret, I want you, Mr. Ricardo, to tell me whether you agree with Mr. Wethermill that Hélène Vauquier is the guilty party.
Well, now... These, I believe, to be the salient features of the mystery. Celia Harland made her entrance into Madame Devray's household by very doubtful means. Once there, she established an ascendancy over her mistress's mind. She arranged for the chauffeur to be absent on the night of the murder. She bought the cord which strangled her mistress and bound the housekeeper. The footmarks suggest that she ran through the open windows from the salon to a waiting motor. Although she had pretended that there would be a séance on Tuesday night, she dressed for an appointment with a gentleman friend. She has since disappeared. All of which strongly suggests that Celia was, at least, complicit in the murder.
She can't have been. We were to be married.
Why do we sit still and do nothing?
We do not. The excellent Perrichet has been making inquiries, and here he comes. Well,
I went to the shop at which Mademoiselle Sully bought the cord. She was quite alone.
Perrichet, would you ask the head waiter to approach us?
Inspector.
We know a little about the mysterious woman, Adele. We have at least Vauquier's description. We should advertise it.
Ah, why did such a fine idea not occur to me? Oh, fool that I am.
Monsieur?
You knew Madame Dauvray?
Oh, that poor woman.
Did the ladies dine here last night?
No, monsieur.
Ah. Have you noticed another woman dining with them recently? A woman, for instance, with red hair?
Oh, no, monsieur.
Thank you, Victor. And we shall have the lobster thermidor.
Monsieur.
A woman with red hair? But Vauquier said she was sallow with dark hair.
I found this red hair on the satinwood table in the salon. Mademoiselle Celie's hair is fair, Vauquier's is black, and Madame's was dyed brown. I believe it is from the head of the unknown woman, and I will tell you more. She is in Geneva.
But that is remarkable. How did you find that out?
I am the captain of the ship. The captain does not show his officers his logbook. Ah, Perrichet returns with more news. Well,
Madame Dauvray's motor car has been found in the coach house of an empty villa.
Then the lobster must wait.
I shall never forgive myself.
Why, Perrichet?
Because I saw this car at 4 this morning, not 50 metres from the Villa Rose.
You must be mistaken.
Servitors.
Monsieur?
I was on duty outside the gates of the villa. The car slackened speed as if to turn into the road in which I stood, but instead accelerated and roared off.
Any passengers?
No. The driver's face was in darkness.
The murderer was within our grasp.
It is better that I go back to my uniform and stand at street corners.
Oh, nonsense, my friend. You recognized the car, and that is something. Now, Servitaz, can you tell from the petrol that was taken from the garage and the amount remaining in the tank how far the car was driven last night?
Between 130 and 150 kilometres.
Good, good. Now, let us examine closely. Yes.
Monsieur Ricardo? What is this?
A green fabric.
Green chiffon. Like Mademoiselle's frock.
And
here is some damp soil, much like we saw outside the windows of the Villa Rose. But we know something now which we did not know before, do we not, Mr. Ricardo?
We know that the murderer has escaped.
It is thoughtful of you to remind me, but we shall catch him. Or her. Or them. Now, let us return to Wethermills Rooms.
Here we cannot be overheard.
Oh, yes, right.
And I will tell you what we've learnt. Last night, the man, the woman with the red hair, and Mademoiselle Sully drove off in the murdered woman's car.
We cannot be certain.
You have a road map, Mr. Wethermill?
Yes.
Mine is, here.
Measure the distance from Aix to Geneva and back. A rough figure will be adequate.
I'd say, 140 kilometres.
Oh, exactly. The man who drove the car to Geneva brought it back because he intended to leave it in the garage of the Villa Rose.
Good heavens.
And when he returns, he sees at the corner of the road the estimable Perrichet. He guesses that the murder has been discovered. So, he drives straight on. On the outskirts of town, he finds an empty villa. He abandons it there.
I cannot understand your calmness.
You are the amateur, I the professional.
Well, I may be the amateur, but I have knowledge which the professional would do well to acquire.
Oh, then let me have it.
I have driven from Geneva to Aix. At the border, you are stopped. Your car is searched. They would tell you whether or no Madame Dauvray's car passed along the route last night, once or twice, or not at all.
That is important.
It is not. Travelling the other way, from France into Switzerland, is a very different affair. In Switzerland, hardly a glance, hardly a word.
But the car came back.
And the man was alone in it. I have more important matters to attend to. Harry, get some sleep. We shall need all our strength tomorrow. I have here, Mr. Ricardo, a copy of the Genevan newspaper which was cried in the streets of Geneva last night.
What?
You will see that it contains an advertisement with a full description of Celie Harland. There's a reward of 4,000 francs to anyone who knows her whereabouts. Applications to be made to...
Mr. Ricardo, Hotel Majestic, Aix-les-Bains.
Precisely.
You have done this. Why?
Well, I did it because I have a sense of humour, and you have 4,000 francs.
I hate publicity.
If I were to give my name, the very people we are seeking to catch will know that I, the incomparable Arnaud, am searching for Mademoiselle Celie.
Also, your description is incomplete. I see here no reference to the diamond eardrops.
Oh, you noticed. Ah, I must look to my laurels. However, Mademoiselle was not wearing the eardrops when she left the Villa Rose.
When did you write this?
Yesterday, when we were at lunch. Commissioner Bernard telegraphed it to the Geneva newspaper offices.
But you never said a word about it to us.
Well, you'd have forbidden me to use your name.
When do you expect a response?
Who knows? Ah, this is excellent coffee. Far better than they serve in my hotel.
How can you sit there so calmly while time passes and nothing is achieved?
Oh, the time would pass in any case. And something has been achieved. Oh, for is not this your valet at the door? Entree!
A telegram, sir.
Oh, right, thank you.
Calmly, my friend. You may go.
Sir.
Well?
Expect me soon after 3, Marthe Gobin.
Excellent.
Should I send for Wethermill?
As you please. But why raise hopes which an hour or two may dash to the ground?
Well, good news will be none the worse for waiting a while, and bad news will be a little the better.
Now, the Continental Bradshaw, from Geneva. Yes, there's a train which reaches Aix at 3:07. You have a motor car?
Yes.
Good. Pick me up in it at 3, and we shall drive to the station. Ah, look. That will be she. The omnibus, maybe? No, she takes a cab. With 4,000 francs almost in her grasp, she can afford the little luxuries. She compares the horses.
She looks honest.
And chooses the freshest. A good bourgeoise. Now, if you drive us back to the hotel, we shall be ready for her the minute she arrives. We're nearing the end. Poor Monsieur Wethermill. I left him drinking coffee on the veranda. These 2 days have been a time of great tribulation for him. She comes?
The carriage is entering the driveway.
Ah, we will put the 4,000 francs upon the table. They will persuade her to tell us all she knows. But we must not frighten her.
The carriage is at the door.
Aha. No.
What is it?
What do you not see? They're lifting her out. She doesn't move. They're lifting her out. Quickly. Come.
Arno.
Yes.
Ricardo, a most terrible thing.
What?
Let me pass, please. Inspector Arnaud, Paris Sûreté. Oh. Doctor, is she dead?
Yes.
The wound? A bullet, perhaps?
No. Here's a point of entry. Straight into her heart.
But not a knife?
Here's the weapon, Inspector.
A kitchen skewer with wooden handles spliced onto one end.
Did she suffer?
No, death would have been instantaneous.
You spoke to the cab driver?
Oh, he saw nothing untoward. He was only concerned that he'd received no fare. Oh, that poor woman. She should have come on the omnibus.
Who would have thought?
I should have thought. It's extraordinarily daring. A kitchen skewer. And what news did she have for us? We shall never know. Time will be lost, but we have no time. Mr. Ricardo, what are these?
This morning's letters. What of them?
This one has a Swiss stamp. Open it. Read.
I write what I saw and post it tonight, so that no one may be before me with the news. I will come to Aix tomorrow for the money. It is of several pages.
And signed?
Marthe Gobin.
She speaks. We may not bring her back to life, but nonetheless. Give me the letter, Ricardo.
It's addressed to me.
Oh.
My husband has had to retire from his work in the Geneva Bank.
This is of no interest. Go on.
About a month ago, the house directly opposite to ours was taken furnished for the summer by a Madame Rossignol. She is a tall woman with red hair.
Ah!
I do not care for Adèle Rossignol.
Adèle?
So, Hélène Vauquier told the truth.
In that respect, she did.
But she said Adèle's hair was black.
In that respect, she didn't. Continue.
There is an old woman and a servant, Hippolyte, who drives the carriage. He seems a respectable fellow. That is the household of Madame Rossignol.
The red-haired woman called Adèle, the driver. Excellent.
At 3 o'clock on Tuesday afternoon, Madame was driven away in her carriage. She did not return until the middle of the night. The carriage stopped at Madame Rossignol's house, which was quite dark, and the door was opened by the servant. A young lady in a white coat stepped from the carriage onto the pavement. The train of her green dress caught in the door, and she had to free it with her hand. When she ran across the pavement into the house, I thought she seemed anxious not to be observed.
There is more about Monsieur Gobin than the signature.
How very perplexing is this voice from beyond the grave. There must have been another telegram sent from Adèle Rossignol to somebody in Aix saying that Marthe Gobin, that busybody, had seen your advertisement and was on her way hither. Who was that somebody? They must be apprehended. For that poor woman's death, I cannot forgive. I must go at once to Commissioner Bernard and tell him why Marthe came to Aix. Her murder will be in the evening papers, and those good people at the villa in Geneva will read of it with amusement. They may not, of course, know that you also wrote a letter. We shall be in time, I think.
For Bernard?
No, for Geneva. I've telephoned ahead to police headquarters. They have the house by the lake under surveillance, but we should be safe until nightfall.
Have you brought handcuffs?
No, but I have a revolver.
There will be danger then. I should have brought mine.
There would certainly have been danger if you had.
We approached the border.
They're waving us through. We shall be punctual for our alfresco dinner at the Restaurant du Nord.
Welcome, my dear old friend.
Ah, Monsieur le Maire. Allow me to introduce my colleague on this case, Mr. Ricardo.
How do you do?
Yes, he's a brave Englishman and goes unarmed. What news from across the lake?
Well, none. No one has left nor entered the house.
And if while we're eating?
Well, you see Durette loitering there under the trees. He'll strike a match to light his pipe.
La carte, monsieur?
Trois anis.
Merci bien, monsieur.
So Madame Dauvray's jewels were, after all, never stolen.
You know that? How do you know it?
Well, it's in this evening's paper. The jewels were found under the floorboards of her bedroom. Does it matter? I know.
It matters. When was that paper published?
Well, the newsboys have been crying it in the streets for more than half an hour.
It was not I who told them. By heaven, that's clever. Ahead of me at every turn.
Well, there. Durette's signal.
Ricardo, pay the bill.
Cut the engine. The front of the house is guarded, as instructed. Ricardo, head for that tree.
Right.
And not a sound as we approach the house. Ah, it gives. Follow me. Look there.
Where?
On the table. A phial of liquid. A needle. Morphia.
Horrible.
Upstairs, quickly.
Now, this will burn you until they no longer recognize you.
Please let me go.
Oh, no. Woman, you leave that flask alone.
Yes.
Le Maire, take her. Take her.
No.
Ricardo, free the girl.
Bear up, Celia, while I cut you free.
Somebody help me.
Yes, I have her.
Oh, now I understand. That is horrible.
Why are we returning to Aix?
They've arrested Hippolyte, the car driver, and the red-headed Adèle in the garden of the villa. I have business in Aix which cannot wait.
Then Celia is not, after all, part of the gang?
Oh. You're amongst good friends, mademoiselle.
Am I?
Oh, be sure of it.
They put me in a cupboard.
Yes, do not distress yourself. There's time enough.
They meant to drown me. I did not think to see the stars again.
Have you had food or drink?
No.
Oh, well, Mr. Ricardo carries a flask, I believe.
Yes, here.
No! No!
What is the matter?
Don't.
It's brandy, that's all. See, I take a sip myself.
No, I thought... It seems impossible to me that I am free.
Well, I've arranged rooms for you in Aix, and there'll be a nurse from the hospital.
If I knew you better, I should tell you that I feel as if I had a big Newfoundland dog next to me in this car.
Oh.
Hanno?
Yes?
Why were you so alarmed when you learned that the news of the discovery of the jewels had been broadcast?
Well, except that I believed the girl to be innocent, merely a witness to the crimes, and in the hands of the criminals.
Very well.
Then there was one chance that she would be kept alive, that they might force her to tell them what she didn't know, namely the place where Madame Dauvray secreted her jewels. I had not thought of a newspaper being cried in the streets. At once, Mademoiselle Celie is a liability to them. I knew we had to hurry.
Why did she not cry out, then or sooner?
Because she could not. Because of the flask of acid. No man or woman could. But here we are, back at the Hotel Majestic.
Ah, how happy Harry will be.
Monsieur, bienvenue.
Is Mr. Weathermillion?
He was arrested this evening, monsieur.
Harry? Arrested? Why?
For the murders of Marthe Gobin and Madame Dauvray. Good night. Are you recovered from the exertions of yesterday?
I couldn't sleep. I kept thinking about Harry. He was my friend. Yet ever since I met him in Aix, he must have been plotting what he was about to do. And Marthe Gobin, how did he manage that?
Hippolyte sent him a coded telegram. It was risky, but they weren't to know that I already suspected Harry Wethermill. Yeah? The telegram was given to him on this veranda at 3 p.m. But a copy had already gone to the prefecture. Harry has 7 minutes. He sees us leave for the station and return alone. He is lucky. Marthe is not. She's taken a cab. It approaches. He runs to the end of the drive, which can't be seen from the hotel. The driver is nodding on his box, the horse moving at a walk. He puts his head into the cab window, or maybe he climbs in beside her. He has his improvised weapon.
Have you come to see Monsieur Ricardo?
Yes.
To receive your reward?
Indeed so, monsieur.
Then here it is.
And then he breaks to us the dreadful news of the murder he has himself committed.
When did you first suspect Harry?
It is not the man of intellect, the brilliant scientist, but Hélène Vauquier who is at the bottom of this extraordinary business.
But she has been let go free.
She is not. After our interrogation, she was driven straight from the Villa Rose to the police depot. She's been held there ever since.
Already you knew of her guilt?
She lied to me in her description of Adèle Rossignol. Also, a pot of cold cream had disappeared from Celie's bedroom. And in the pot were the eardrops which Celie habitually wore.
But what exactly did happen on that Tuesday night?
Ah, as to that, there is just one person who, as soon as she's strong enough, can tell us.
After my father's bankruptcy and death in Paris, I took what work I could find. At last, dancing in a supper room in Montmartre. It was there one night that Madame befriended me and invited me to Aix. Hélène Vauquier hated me on sight.
And what of the séances?
When I was a child in England, it was just fun, monsieur. But when I saw how excited and feverish Madame became, I grew scared. A few days after we arrived in Aix, I met Harry in the casino. And I fell in love.
Harry had sold the rights to his patents twice over.
His creditors were closing in. So he came to Aix. He hoped to win at the casino. But there was a greater prize awaiting him.
I believed that I was the prize.
He tried his luck at the tables and he failed. And then Elaine introduced him to the Tassé family. Adèle, her husband Hippolyte, and her mother Jeanne. They'd taken a house in Geneva in order to carry out some robberies from the fine villas on the lakeside.
One night, I was driving home with Madame in the motor car. She told me of this woman, Adèle, a sceptic.
She said you would never agree to undergo tests by someone you did not know. I said that you would. Was I not right, Selly? It would break my heart if you had tricked me.
Let her come. Madame told Hélène Vauquier that she would require her presence at the séance. And Hélène arranged for me to tell Servetaz, the chauffeur, that he might have Tuesday evening off to visit his family. And on Wednesday... We have plans for tomorrow, Harry, but the night after I shall want you.
I shall thank you for wanting me. Here at the Villa des Fleurs?
Where else? I felt sure he would formally propose to me. And so for the last time, Hélène and I set up the table for the séance. Adèle arrived early.
I shall decide what you are to wear, Célie.
Certainly.
Would Mademoiselle also consent to be tied hand and foot and fastened securely in a chair?
Of course.
Oh, you shall believe tonight in these wonderful things, Adèle.
Then let us go and buy the cord.
They had laid their plans carefully.
Célie! Célie, vite!
This is the last time, Hélène.
The last time, Mademoiselle. Don't worry, Mademoiselle. We shall manage.
The salon was brightly lit. Hélène locked the door from the inside. Adèle handed me a pair of long white gloves.
Mademoiselle should wear these. And now please to put your hands behind your back. No, Mademoiselle, palm to palm. Tight.
Ah, are you afraid, Célie?
No, madame. I am not.
Now, Célie, with your face to the mirror where all may see you.
We've had no such tests as these.
And Hélène lifted me in her arms, trussed as I was, and carried me to the stool in the recess. And my vague alarm became a definite terror.
Madame! Madame! There is something! A presence here! Someone who means harm! I know it!
I shall keep my foot on the other end of this line, and I shall know if the little one frees herself.
Let us take our seats at the table. Hélène, will you turn off the lights?
Wait. I will see what she's doing.
Hélène, what am I to do?
Do nothing and say nothing. To which end I shall put this gag in your mouth. There! Mademoiselle has not moved.
Hélène switched off the light.
Do you hear any sound?
After a while, I found that the room was not as dark as it had been. Through a chink in the curtains around me, I could make out a figure, a man climbing over the sill. It was Harry. He put his gloved hand to the bandage over my mouth and felt for the knot at the back of my neck. I would be free. Then I knew, although I did not understand. He was tightening the knots, not loosening them. Finally, he untied the cord which ran from my waist to Adèle Rossignol's foot and jerked it. It was the signal.
Now give me your hand, and we have completed our circle.
Oh. Who are you that come to us from the spirit world? Answer! Oh! Fingers touch my forehead. Now my cheek. Huh. Now they touch my throat! No!
They were murdering the kind old woman, my mistress, in the dark.
That's horrible.
What's the matter?
She's fallen against me, her whole weight.
Turn on the light. You see? There's nothing to be afraid of, Harry. She is quite dead.
And will have no further use of her necklace, her bracelets, her rings, or her keys.
Which is the key to her safe?
This one. Get the jewels out of the safe, Harry. You're no use to us like this.
You promised you would blindfold the girl.
What does it matter?
There would have been no need to do it.
Wouldn't there?
Bring her to the sofa, Hélène.
Lie
Lie there!
Adele and Mr. Wethermill, whom you love, are going to take you away with them. But when you fail to return, everyone will know that you helped to rob and murder your benefactress.
I shall go and help Harry.
Mademoiselle Celie, these diamond eardrops could be a provocation to thieves. May I be permitted to remove them? Oh, it's not ladylike to kick. Lie still, do you hear?
The safe's empty. We've searched the room. We found nothing.
The girl will know. Give her pencil and paper.
Untie her hands.
Right.
None of them. And especially not Harry had pity on me. As best I could, I wrote...
Je ne sais pas.
You have got to know. If not, by God, I'm...
There were footsteps on the gravel of the drive. The beam of a torch shone for a moment outside. The handle of the door rattled. And then the footsteps moved away.
Take her away. We will come to Geneva in a few days and persuade her to tell us what we need to know.
Helene, get to bed. Harry will get the chloroform and put you to sleep.
I was left alone with Adele. What new torture was in store? She knelt down in front of me and untied the cords which bound my legs.
I can't endure it. You're too young to be killed. Here, let me rub some feeling back into your poor ankles. Oh. Can you stand? Keep still, child.
I'll go and open the gates and bring round the car. Are you ready?
Yes.
Now run, Celie. Run for your life.
And that was how they ensured that your footmarks proved that you had left the room of your own free will.
And Harry must have erased the marks left by himself and Adele.
That was when they made their mistake.
What is it, Harry?
I've left the light burning in Helene's room.
We can't go back now. I dare not. It's over.
And just before Geneva, they transferred to a landau, and Adele and Mademoiselle Celie went on to that fearful house by the lake.
When I came round, it was to find a sack sewn over my face so that I should see nothing of their preparations for me, and that I do not now lie in a weighted sack at the bottom of the lake. I owe to you, gentlemen.
Oh.
What will happen to them?
Well, for the women, imprisonment for life.
And for the men?
Perhaps the guillotine. Perhaps New Caledonia. The final decision will be for the President of the Republic.
Monsieur Hanaud, you promised me that once the trial was over, you would explain how you resolved the case.
One small accident, three little mistakes.
Harry's failure to discover the jewels.
No, my friend. The accident was that Perrichet entered the garden while the murderers were still in the salon. And so they left the light burning in Hélène Vauquier's room. And the murder was discovered 7 hours too soon.
When did you first suspect Harry Wethermill?
Before you even came to see me, Bernard had told me that he had left London with heavy debts. Yet he was playing at the top table. His audacity delighted me. He begged the first detective in France to take the case, claiming that since he loved Celie, she must be innocent.
I have to confess that I thought they might be accomplices.
It did not look good for her. But when I approached the truth, what did Harry say when I mentioned the cushion?
That's nothing.
That was all he said. But why? Suddenly he was afraid of what those cushions might have to tell.
And what did they tell?
If Celie had lain tied on the sofa, how had she managed to leap through the window and leave her footprints outside?
I follow that.
I was lucky that the commissioner's men had missed the long strand of red hair. The drawers in the chest in Celie's room contained hints of grease. I concluded that Hélène Vauquier had touched Mademoiselle Celie's pot of cold cream. Why? Perhaps to hide some small thing which she had not before had the opportunity to hide.
The diamond eardrops.
From these small evidences, I created a scenario. Only in Celie's room will the drops be safe. The following day, she goes to the girl's room and reclaims them. I have her driven to the depot and searched. All is discovered.
Remarkable.
We have one great stroke of luck. The letter from Marthe Gouvin.
And Harry's mistake?
We talked in Mr. Wethermill's rooms of the distance between Aix and Geneva. I asked him for a road book. He produced one at once.
A new one. Well, I hope that I took it calmly, for I was not calm inside. Why, I asked myself, should a man who owns no motor car, who hires no motor car, buy himself an automobilist's road map? But I'd not supposed that he was capable of the murder of Marthe Gournay. She must be killed, and he kills her. He had told us truly that he was not a romantic.
One other thing which has been troubling me.
Well?
How did you know where the jewels were hidden?
Oh, I knew only where the others had not looked. But tell me, Mr. Ricardo, what news of Mademoiselle Celie?
I have a sister in London to whom I wrote. She is a widow and kind. Celia will be welcome there.
Oh, she should not be a burden for long. She is very pretty and very gentle. If no one else comes along, she might care for a Newfoundland dog. Besides, I have good news for her, too. I have a letter from the Prefecture. Madame Dauvray made a will before she died.
She left money to Celia?
No. She left her her jewels, including a pair of diamond eardrops. For her sake, at least, Mr. Ricardo, I'm glad that I came to your amusing dinner party in London.
I am glad for all our sakes. I shall give another and invite my sister and Celia Harland. Will you come?
To see Mademoiselle Celie and Madame Dauvray's jewels, I should cross continents.
In At the Villa Rose by A.E.W. Mason, adapted for radio by David Benedictus, Inspector Hanno was played by Andrew Sachs. Ricardo was Ian Masters, Celia Harland, Fiona Clark, and Harry Wethermill, Nicholas Rowe. Ellen Vauquier was Alice Arnold, Sergeant Perrichet, Stephen Critchlow, and Commissioner Brainard, Sean Baker. Madame Dauvray was Janet Whiteside, and Adele, Becky Hindley. Other parts were played by members of the cast. The director was Marion Nancarrow.